Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the drug trust when we come back. Hey, if you're earning $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep about 40% of what you create and produce, and the government gets the other 60%. That's about $20,000 for you and $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just real special? Now, if you think that your share isn't enough for you, then why don't you work twice as hard and produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes just like you did this year, and you're going to net about 25%, and then the government will net 75%. That means that for working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you'll net $4,000 more. That's 8% more net take-home pay than you did this year. You produce 100% more and get 8% of it. Now, there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners and then only net 25% of it, don't you think? Why don't you call today and order our free 4-hour CD package, and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information, and it answers many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is that we pay so much and receive so little. And let me show you how to do just that in our Tax and Status School, which is now available on compact disc for adult homeschool. Now, to order that free general law CD package, just call direct and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Or if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto our archives page and then download it directly from our archives page. So you can do it either way. You can call us direct at 417-273-4967 or go to our website and download it if you're online. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it? The Drug Trust. Have you ever wondered how much money is involved in drugs? We hear a lot about drugs, especially here in the United States. They're talking about drugs constantly in the news, but what they're really referring to are illegal drugs. They're always talking about the cocaine being smuggled into the United States, and we spend billions and billions of dollars of taxpayer money to prevent these drugs from coming into the United States. We're just working our hearts out over here, just doing everything we can to get this drug problem under control. Have you ever wondered how much profit, though, is there in this drug trade? Well, when you go down to the street corner and you buy crack cocaine, you pay 1/6 what it costs to buy the same drug, although it's produced by one of the licensed, bonded, and insured drug companies. You pay 1/6 on the street corner of what you'll pay at Rexall or Osco Betry. Now, isn't that just something? Yeah, that's right. Now, all three of the major drugs, well, I guess I could put four in there. Methamphetamines, those are sold by Rexall. Those come from your major drug manufacturers. They make it every day. Doctors prescribe it. Then there's cocaine. Cocaine isn't sold under the trade name cocaine. They call it Valium or something else, you know. Then there's morphine, but they have different trade names for morphine. On the street, they call it heroin. And then there's the old standby marijuana. And marijuana now is very popular, and you can buy that from a druggist, get that from your doctor. I don't know off the top of my head what these trade names are. I have a student who's a druggist, and he came in one day and he was explaining it to me, and I couldn't remember the trade names. Didn't mean anything to me. I'd never heard them before, but he said, yeah, that's right. As a druggist, I put this stuff together every day. Doctors prescribe it for people, and they get 6 times more money. Now, the reason I found out it was 6 times more, I asked my student, I said, what is the price that you charge for this prescription drug? And he gave me the prices. And so I turned around and I said, okay, now for cocaine, heroin, and marijuana, I talked to a couple other students and said, hey, out on the street, what do these cost? And they came back and they said, well, here's what it costs on the street. This is what I can buy it for. That's why I'm telling you, it's 1/6 out on the street. Now, Joe, the drug dealer down on the corner, is making a profit. In fact, he makes a lot of money with these illegal drugs. Making 1/6 as much as Merck and Pfizer, he's still making a lot of money. Well, now, if that's the case, then how much profit is there in the legal drug trade? And who's behind the legal drug trade anyway? I mean, we've got government, you know, sponsoring the Food and Drug Administration. We've got government. They're involved in licensing and scrutinizing hospitals and doctors and druggists, and all the people that go into the medical establishment are licensed, bonded, and insured. So government's into this legal drug trade right up to their eyeballs, regulating and controlling it. And then you've got these major manufacturers of the drugs, the pharmaceutical industry, of which there are 16 others, 18 worldwide, 18 major players in this drug trade. And how much money do they make? And what's the percent of profit that they make on the drugs that they sell? Is it a profitable business? Then you've got the doctors that are prescribing it. Of course, they're part and parcel with the thing. And you've got the drug stores. That's Walgreens and Osco Betry and Rexall and so on. And then you've got all the druggists. They have to go to college to learn how to make these compounds and drugs, and they're licensed, bonded, and insured. Now, notice that the government licenses, bonds, and insures all of these drug players. The pharmaceutical industry, the druggists, the doctors, the hospitals. Everybody that's involved in here is, and all these people are making profits, and all these people are paying taxes. So government has a very vital role to play in this drug business. That's the legal drug business. They also have a very important role to play in the illegal drug business, because you see, every time you buy drugs on the street corner, it takes a sale away from the Rexall store. Well, think about it. The illegal drug trade is siphoning off billions of dollars a year that you people would spend. I mean, you're going to buy your drugs anyway. Let's wake up and be realistic. If people want drugs, they're going to buy drugs. And I've often wondered why it is that people want to go down on the street corner and buy these dirty drugs that have been cut. You know, and been cut with God knows what. You know, is it just powdered sugar, or are they cutting it with something that's even more lethal? And we trust our drug companies because they're giving us pure drugs. Pure. I like that word, pure. That has the connotation that it's clean, healthy, wholesome, made in stainless steel vats, not being cooked up in somebody's kitchen, you know, at the end of a dead-end road in Ozark County someplace. That's the way they make methamphetamine. Now, I got a report in here the other day from J. Richard Nymila dealing with the prices and the profits that the major drug companies make. So let me give you some numbers. Get your pen and paper out here. I think this will boggle your mind. It did me. I'm a businessman. I'm right at the head of the list when it comes to making profit. One of the first things I tell my students, or I ask the question when they come in the classroom, I say, what is the purpose of business? And sometimes people will say, well, it's to produce products. Well, it's to employ people. Well, you know, it's to do this, that, or something else. Once in a while, somebody will say it's to make profit. And that's the business of business, is making profit. You see, it is true that business does employ people, but that's not the purpose for business. Nobody opens a business and says, I'm going to open this new business because I want to employ people and keep them off the streets and out of the pool holes. It's never happened in history. It isn't happening now. It isn't going to happen in the future. It's never happened in the past. So while it's true that people are employed because of business, that's not the purpose of business. It's to make products. Yeah, it's true. As a result of opening a business, we make products, or we dispense services, or we sell goods. And that's a benefit. I mean, after all, you need to buy gasoline, don't you? You need to buy shoes and things like that. But the shoe company that's making those shoes did not open the company because they saw you walking around barefoot and said, well, we just need to make shoes so that Bob and Sally over there don't have to walk around barefoot. They might have seen you walking around without shoes and then said, well, here's a business opportunity. Let's go into the shoe business and make shoes for Bob and Sally. And there was a reason why we took our time, effort, and energy and our money and we opened a shoe store, or we opened a shoe company. We started making shoes. And the answer is profit. The only reason for business is profit. There are collateral benefits that come from business, but the purpose of business is profit. We're not doing this because we want to employ you, or because we're feeling sorry for you because you're walking around barefoot. Nobody cares about that. And the drug companies, they're not making these drugs because they're concerned about sickness and disease. That's the cover story. I understand that. I've been watching the television and reading the Reader's Digest just like you do, but that's the cover story, and you have to have a good cover story. I mean, you can't just run out there and say, no, I'm making these drugs because I want to make a profit. Now, Joe down on the street corner, he's quite a bit more honest than Pfizer. He's down there dispensing drugs because he knows that they feel good and you're going to like them and you want them, and he's just filling a need. But his purpose for doing this, his reason for risking prison is profit. Now, the druggist and the doctor and the executives that run these companies and the people that work for Hoffman LaRoche and GlaxoSmithKline and so on, they don't want to go to jail either. So they're a little smarter. See, they go to the legislature and they get laws passed and enacted to legalize their drugs. That's why we call it the drug trust or the drug cartel. Now, they have cartels down in Colombia. Drug manufacturers in Colombia get together and they agree that the price that we're all going to charge is so much. And then they work together and they smuggle the drugs into the United States or Mexico or Switzerland or Germany or wherever they're destined. And these are called the drug cartels. Well, a cartel is a group of business people, a group of people, it's a conspiracy is what it is, to set prices. That's nothing more, nothing less. It's just business. It doesn't have anything to do with personalities or anything like that. It's just the way we do business and we maximize our profits. De Beers, the diamond company, that's a monopoly. And they work with diamond mines all over the world and they buy their products and then they hold them off the market to make them scarce. Because something that's scarce is worth more. See, water is cheaper than Coca-Cola. It takes more time, effort, and energy, you know, to put Coca-Cola together. Although you wouldn't know it when you go to put your money into a vending machine to buy Coke or water, you know, they charge you the same price. But moral of the story is there's a lot more water out there than there is Coca-Cola. And so Coca-Cola charges a little bit more than you're paying for that water that's flowing out of your tap. Now let's take a look here at the big companies over here. We got your pen and paper out here now? All right, you ready to go? There's 18 of these companies over here, and I'm going to give you some numbers right off the bat here. Now, this is going back to 1988 when this book called Murder by Injection, written by Eustace Mullins, was put out. So if you want to know what the inflation rate is between 1988 and today, it's 130%. So you take these numbers and you just multiply it out times 130. For instance, here's one here. Merck, M-E-R-C-K. In 1988, they sold $4.2 billion in sales. And so I'm going to take 4.2 times 130. And that's 5.46. So, am I right? No, no, you're right. 4.2 times 130. Here we go. Well, it's going to be Merck. That would be 100%. Would be 8.4. Then you take 8.4 times 30. So I'm going to go 8.4 times 0.30. That's another 2.5. So it's 8.457. So sell $11 billion today. So Merck is selling $11 billion in today's dollars today. So multiply that out times 130, it'd be 100% plus another 30 from the 1980s until 2009. Glaxo Holdings in the United Kingdom is $3.4 billion. That's in 1988 dollars. Hoffman LaRoche, $3.1 billion. Smith, Kline, Beckman, $2.8 billion. Pfizer, $2.5 billion. Ciba Geigy in Switzerland, $2.7 billion. Horsch AG in Germany, $2.5 billion. American Home Products, $2.4 billion. Lilly, $2.3 billion. Upjohn, $2 billion. Squibb, $2 billion. And then there's Johnson & Johnson, Sandoz, Bristol-Myers, Beckham Group. Bayer AG in Germany. Syntax and Warner Lambert. Now, Standard & Poor's says in 1988, Warner & Lambert was making $3.1 billion. Now, the numbers run around $2 to $4 billion here. I think you could average them all out. 18, these are the top 18, at $3 billion each. So if we were to take 3 and double it to 6 and then take 30% of 6 times 0.30 is 1.8. It's nearly 2. So today, in today's dollars, 2009, the 18 top drug companies in the world are averaging about $8 billion a year in sales. Now there's 18 of them, so let's go with 18 times 8. That's 144 billion dollars. Yeah. So you got 18 of them. They're averaging $8 billion each. That's $144 billion. We're talking about some pretty sizable amounts of money there. Now, have you ever heard of the street price for drugs? Whenever the cops make a bust, they say, well, the street value of this is. Now, the manufacturer of these drugs, when they sell them, the drug manufacturer, he sells it to the drugstore. And in the drugstore, he marks it up. And the doctor, you know, he's getting a cut out of that. And it depends upon how his relationship is with the drugstores and so on. And hospitals, you know, the hospitals oftentimes, they have their own drug store inside the hospital. I heard one story one time where they were selling Tylenol for $8 a tablet. Well, hell, for a couple of bucks, you can go in and buy Tylenol across the counter, can't you? Of course, you don't have that pretty nurse delivering it to you with a cup of water. I got to admit, you know, when you're in the hospital, you got the nurse delivering the pill with the water, which is a little added extra service. And, of course, you don't have to open the pill bottle and shake one out, you know. But normal people, you know, when you got a headache or you're feeling poor or something like that and you want a Tylenol, you buy them at the drugstore, you keep them in your medicine cabinet, and you go in the bathroom, you shake one out and drink it down, and and it doesn't cost you $8. Now, that's kind of scandalous, $8 in a hospital for a Tylenol. But have you ever heard what the profit margin is? I mean, this legitimate drug business, I mean, these guys make a lot of money. They make a lot of money. So hospitals make a lot of money, druggists make a lot of money, drugstores make a lot of money, doctors make a lot of money, the manufacturers make a lot of money. Then government comes in and taxes all of this. See, the government comes in, they tax it. They make a lot of money. So if you're wondering why they're trying to put the cocaine dealers out of business down on the street corner, it's because they're competing with the big business. You know, they're competing with the trust, the drug trust, and they don't like that. So like the mafia in the big cities here in the United States, we have a thing called the mafia. They allegedly came from Sicily, and they're over here, and they're called organized crime. These guys called the mafia and the Cosa Nostra a bunch of rank amateurs compared to where the big money's at. I mean, they're just a bunch of hoodlums on the street trying to make a buck. They're kind of down here with the drug dealers on the street. Now, they're competing, and they compete very effectively with the legal drug trade. To give you an illustration, the biggest crop here in the United States is marijuana. It's estimated at $37 billion a year, and the next three biggest crops, corn, soybeans, and wheat, all total around 25 to 30 billion a year. So marijuana is grown illegally. And it's there's no government price supports. There's no government storage, no government buyback program. I mean, it's just a free market enterprise, marijuana. Whereas corn and wheat and soybeans, they've got government farm subsidies and farm programs and land banks and set-aside programs. I mean, they're just out here working their hearts out trying to help you farmers just get by. Just making. I think that the farmers of America could take a page right out of the marijuana grower's handbook here if you wanted to know how to make money. You want your wheat, corn, and soybeans to be declared to be illegal. You're going to get out there and show the people of America that genetically modified organisms are killing them and that they're bad for them, and then get corn banned from the marketplace, and then you corn growers out there, I mean, just take a look at the price of corn then, and then you'll be selling that stuff, you know, not by the bushel, be selling it by the gram. All right, now with that introduction out of the way, you got 18 drug companies over here worldwide making about $8 billion a year each in today's dollars. That's about $150 billion a year in round numbers. It's a tidy little sum. Now, that $150 billion gets marked up. Have you ever wondered how much does it get marked up? How much? Well, now, let's take the brand name Celebrex. Celebrex is put out who makes Celebrex? Did you ever wonder how much it costs a drug company for the active ingredients in prescription medications? Some people think it must cost a lot, since many drugs sell for more than $2 a pill. We did a search of offshore chemical synthesizers that supply the active ingredients found in drugs approved by the FDA. And as we have revealed in past issues of Life Extension, a significant percentage of drugs sold in the United States contain active ingredients made in other countries. In our independent investigation of how much profit drug companies really make, we obtained the actual price of active ingredients used in some of the most popular drugs sold in America. So we'll start here with Celebrex. Get your pen and paper out here. You'll be amazed at these numbers here. Celebrex. It costs $130.27 for 100 tablets. So if you go into your local drugstore and you buy 100 tablet bottle of Celebrex, it's going to cost you $130. The cost of the active ingredients is 60 cents. That's less than a penny a pill. So the percent of markup is 21,712%. Did that choke you up? 21,712%. Now let's give you a little cost comparison. Let's suppose you went down to your local Firestone store and you had tires put on your car. And you got the bill, and it was $350. Okay, you got four tires for $350. Let's round that off to $400, shall we? $400. Now, the store has overhead. It has mechanics working, and it has people there. And they sold you these tires for around, you know, $75 each. And then they charged you to balance them to install them. And then they rounded it off, and it was $400, $100 each. How much profit did the Firestone store make on that $400 transaction? Well, as a general rule, they keystone their markup. So what that means is that if they sold you tires for $100 each, they paid $50 each for those tires. Now, the manufacturer that manufactured those tires, that's the Firestone company, you know, out in Ohio someplace, they sold those tires for $25. That's what it cost them to make them. And that means that they sold them for $50, and then the retailer sold them for $100. So how much then did it cost for the ingredients that went into the tires? And the answer is about $12.50. So here's the way this price structure works here in the United States anyway. Most businesses operate on a keystone markup. Some operate on a two or three keystone markup. For instance, if you're dealing in diamonds and jewelry, the customary markup is 300%, three marks, they call that, three keystone. If you're selling milk, the markup is 10%. So you buy a gallon of milk for $3 and then you sell it for $3.30 and you make a 30-cent profit. Those are called fair trade items. If you're selling tires for 100 bucks each, you paid 50 and sold it for 100. So you doubled your money, which is good. I mean, business makes a lot of money. Business is good, and I'm not arguing about profitability here. Let me show you how valuable this can be. Let's suppose you're in the Firestone store, and you write a check for $200 and send it off to the Firestone company, and they ship you four tires. Now, you sell those four tires within a week, and then you make a $200 profit. So what's your annual profit margin in here? Well, if it's four tires and you're doing this every week, then we would multiply that times 50, wouldn't we? You got about 50 weeks in a year, just to round it off. So let me just multiply that out. You got $200, and that's your profit on this transaction, times 50. So you make $10,000. So you have a $200 bill that just constantly cycles through your checking account. And every week, this $200 that you're investing in tires turns over, until at the end of the year, you make $10,000 off of selling four tires. This particular size tire, you sell one set a week. Furniture stores do the same thing. They'll have a Lazy Boy recliner on their showroom floor, and they sell one a week. Now, the Lazy Boy sells for $500, let's pick a number. So the furniture store is writing a check every week for $250. They sell one a week. They make $250 off of it. So they're making $250 a week off of their Lazy Boy. And that Lazy Boy sits on 9 square feet of space, about 3 by 3. So then they compute it out and they say, well, the return on the square footage of our store, the profitability per square foot is. Now, these businesses make a lot of money. There's just no two ways about it. $200 divided into 10,000, and the $200 is 50 times. So you're making 50 marks per annum, and you compute your profitability per annum. See, now that's the way normal guys do it. Now, if you're in the cattle business like I am, and you raise a cow up, and it costs you, $500, $600, $700 to raise this cow up, and you sell the cow for $800, you make $100. It takes 2 years to raise this cow up, and you make $100. It's $50 a year. So we out here in the real world, we don't make very much. We make arithmetic progression. And the businesses out here, like Firestone and JCPenney and these other stores, they make geometric progression in their profitability. And then we have the drug companies. Now, how often do you buy the Celebrex? Well, let's suppose that you're taking one pill a day. And that's a modest amount. I'd say if you're on Celebrex, you're probably taking one a day. So that'd be 365 a year, or about 3.5 of these a year. So you're going to spend $130. Let's just multiply that. 130 times 3.5 is $455. So you're going to spend about $450 on this Celebrex. And when you get to the end of the year, what did it cost the company to make it? Well, you've paid $450, and it cost them $1.80. Cost them $1.80 to make $450. You see why their percent of markup over here is 21,712%. I mean, it's not 5,000%, which is what the guy's making 50 times. That's 5,000% on the tires, which is great. I mean, that's big. If you're investing, if you get your 401k and you're invested in stocks and bonds and stuff like that, and you're getting a steady return of 5% a year, they call you a shrewd investor. Making 5% a year, compounded annually for 40 years, you'll make 7 times. Your investment will multiply by 7 times in 40 years. But take a look at the tires. His investment multiplies by 50 times per year. And how many times does this $450 multiply? Well, take $450, and let's divide that by, $2, and it's 225 times. Now, that's at the retail level. See, now the manufacturer, he's making 21,712%. Well, he and the drug stores and the rest of them. Now, that's better than selling marijuana, cocaine, or heroin on the street corner. In fact, it's 6 times better. 6 times. That's why we have such a big illegal drug trade, and that's because the legal drug trade is so high priced with government aid and abetting that in the final analysis, the drug cartels from Colombia, they can't miss. They just come in here. They could raise their prices by 2 or 3 times and still compete and be more than effective. So the guy that's selling you the drugs down on the street corner over there has really got an underpriced product compared to these 18 drug manufacturers. Hey, we're at the halfway point, and I've got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go directly to our archives page at georgegordon.org or georgegordon.com and download it directly. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear in this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us directly at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the Drug Trust. The Drug Trust is made up of an international cartel of drug manufacturers. These are not the only drug manufacturers. These are the biggest, 18 worldwide. Now, they don't even buy the active ingredients here in the United States, because if they did, their cost of the raw ingredients to go into their drugs might be 2, 3, or 5 times more. So they go to India primarily. There's 3 big Indian manufacturing companies that manufacture the raw materials that go into these drugs. So if they were to buy a ton of an active ingredient here in the United States and it cost them $1,000, they can go to India and get that same drug made for $300. So that's why they go to India to have those drugs made. Now, the drug itself is actually made here in the United States. I mean, they take the ingredients that they buy from other places in the world and then they put all those ingredients together. Now, they've got research and development, and they will cite, oh my God, it costs us a lot of money to research and develop this. Well, some of that's got some merit, but most of it doesn't. Because oftentimes, if you take, for instance, the war on cancer, the taxpayers of America are out here busily paying their tax dollars, and then the federal government allocates billions of dollars of taxpayers' money to go into scientific research. So when a drug is developed with this taxpayer money, and Hoffman, LaRoche, or Merck, or Pfizer, or Bristol-Myers, or somebody else, then picks up this money that they've used. See, they got the money free from the taxpayers, and then they develop a drug, and then they go out into the marketplace and they sell that drug. Well, did you think they're going to give the money back to the government? Did you think they're going to pay the government a percentage or something? I mean, come on. You know, business is business. Let's wake up and smell the coffee here. So it is true. Drug companies, they do have staffs that actually are practicing and experimenting and trying to develop drugs. But the idea that all of this cost is being borne by the drug companies and has to be amortized over the price of the drug is a fiction. That's the cover story. You've got to have a cover story. Most of it is done by taxpayer dollars, and then the drug companies profit from that. So you get shafted 2 ways. Number one, you get to pay the tax, to pay the drug company, and to experiment and find a drug, and then you get to go buy the drug. which they don't even buy the active ingredients for the drug here in the United States. So they take your dollars and buy it from India, which adds to your balance of payments deficit. How do you like that? Isn't that just special? Now there's a drug called Claritin. And the consumer price for 100 tablets of Claritin now is $215.17. The cost of the general active ingredients is 71 cents. So the percent of markup is 30,306%. So Celebrex, 21,000% markup. Claritin, 30,000% markup. That just kind of clean. All right, now we've got Keflex, K-E-F-L-E-X. Consumer price, 100 tablets, $157.39. The cost of the general active ingredients is $1.88. The percent of markup is 8,372%. See, it's only got an 8,000% markup. I mean, it's getting down there to where we're kind of talking about tires and pizza. Kind of just ordinary run-of-the-mill markup. Now, if a businessman like George Gordon, you know, if I could make in a year's time, if I could invest $1,000 in cattle and at the end of the year I made a $1,000 profit off of my $1,000, I'd be driving a new Dodge Dually every year. See, we don't make that kind of money. Not out here in the real world. Truck drivers don't. Farmers don't. Plumbers, carpenters, and electricians, you know, those of us that are out here actually doing the work, we don't make that kind of money. Now, we get to pay the taxes to the people who do make that kind of money, but we don't. So I just thought, it's kind of like banking, you know. The bankers over here, they made a lot of bad loans called liar loans. And then when they got into trouble, you and I get to pay our taxes and bail them out. And you can rest assured now that if you and I get into trouble, that the bank is not going to work with you to help you get through this tough time. I mean, they're not now, they haven't in the past, and they're not going to in the future, and you're all getting an opportunity to see that, aren't you? If you take a look at Joe Sixpack in Las Vegas, Nevada, which has got about an 18% foreclosure rate. Now, Bank of America got $45 billion of Joe Sixpack's tax dollars out there in Las Vegas. Then Joe lost his job down at the casino. Joe can't make his house payments. Do you think Bank of America is going to go out there and say, Joe, because we got your $45 billion, you and a lot of other people, let's work out a deal here until you get back to work. You know, let's work out a payment moratorium here for 18 months until you get back on your feet. Hell no. They just say, Joe, get out of our house and throw him out on the street. Now, that's business. Now, your government over here is spearheading this whole process. Remember, it's the government that's enacting these laws to take your tax dollar and give it to Bank of America and Citicorp and the rest of it. Hey, it's your tax dollars that's out here supporting the Food and Drug Administration and licensing and bonding. And now, here's a kicker. In 2002, I believe it was, or 2004, a guy by the name of Dick Armey, he was a Republican representative from Texas. And when the Republicans were in control of Congress, not that the Democrats wouldn't have done it had they been in control, but it happened that the Republicans were in control, he put a rider on a bill, snuck it in on a bill, and it got enacted, and the president signed it, which bans you and I from suing any of these 18 drug manufacturers if the vaccine that they have produced causes autism or causes some kind of side effects that cause you damage. You can't sue them anymore. So government is working hand in glove with these 18 manufacturers. Now, are they working for you and I when we get damaged so that we can get compensated for our kid that's got autism? Or the kid that died from SIDS? So rest assured that it's government and big business working together that makes this whole thing work. That's why we call it the drug trust. It isn't just the manufacturers. It isn't just the doctors. It isn't just the hospitals. It isn't just the FDA. It isn't just the government. It's all of them working together in a conspiracy. Now, of course, in a criminal activity, we call it a conspiracy. If they're acting legally, we call it a cartel. That's why it's called a cartel or a trust. This is called the drug trust. Now, the guy that exposes this and does the best job that I've seen is a guy by the name of Eustace Mullins, and this book is called Murder by Injection, The Story of the Medical Conspiracy Against America. And this is chapter 9. It's called the drug trust. We're going to cover this drug trust with a little more detail. You can get a copy of the book, by the way, from Brave New Bookstore in Austin, Texas. I think that's the fastest, easiest way for you to get it. This book was first put out in 1988. It's been reproduced after that, republished. But I'm not sure that you can get it from the publisher, the manufacturer of the book. Or at least I'm not convinced of it. And I've had this copy for about 20 years. BraveNewBookstore.com, if you're on the Internet. It's an easy one, BraveNewBookstore.com. Their phone number is 512-480-2503. 512-480-2503. Now, if you'd like a copy of this report that I'm reporting on right now, you go to J. Richard Niemela, N-I-E-M-E-L-A. And it's called Good News Prescription Meds. That's the subject. Good News / PRESCIPMEDS. And the story was verified at http://www.snopes.com/medical/drug/generic.asp. So the story's been verified by Niemela. Niemela's a pretty good guy. I think you can rely pretty much on his reporting. And I'm reporting on his report, so I'm going to give J. Richard Niemela credit for putting this report out. But Eustace Mullins is the guy that wrote the book Murder by Injection, the story of the medical conspiracy against America. You might get it at Barnes & Noble. Now, this probably isn't going to change your drug buying habits, and I'm not here to get you to give up on Claritin or Keflex or Lipitor or anything else. But I wanted to give you a report on what the profit margins are so that you can see that the drug industry is making buku bucks. They're making it off of you. They have virtually nothing invested. They're not spending their money to develop these drugs. They're spending taxpayer money. Now, not in every single case, but in the cancer realm they are. They're spending taxpayer money. They develop new cancer drugs all the time, take them out in the marketplace, sell them for billions of dollars a year, and you're out here busily buying them up. All right, let's try Lipitor. Lipitor, that's a pretty common drug, $272.37 for 100 tablets. Now, the cost of the active ingredients is $5.80. So compared to a lot of these, I mean, they got $5.80 worth of stuff in a $272 bottle. Their profit margin is 4,696%. It runs around 5,000%. Now, here's a good one. Norvasc, N-O-R-V-A-S-C, 10 milligram tablets. 100 tablets cost $188.29. The ingredients cost 14 cents. The percent of markup, 134,493%. 134,493% markup. Here's Paxil, P-A-X-I-L, 20 milligram tablet. 100 tablets cost $220.27. Now the active ingredients are $7.60. That leaves them with just 2,898% profit. Hey, listen, if I made 100%, I'd be driving a new Dodge Dually. This guy makes 2,898%. Hey, you go figure, would you? Prevacid, P-R-E-V-A-C-I-D, 30 milligram tablets. 100 tablets cost $44.77. The active ingredients cost $1 and a penny. The markup on it's 34,136%. Prilosec, P-R-I-L-O-S-E-C, 20 milligram tablet. 100 tablets cost $360.97, 360.97. The cost of the ingredients, 52 cents. Markup, 69,417%. Notice these guys aren't marking this up 100%, 200%. 300% like they do diamonds. I mean, it's in the thousands of percents. Prozac, P-R-O-Z-A-C, Prozac, 20 milligram tablet, $247, costs 11 cents, 224,973%, about 225,000% profit. Here's one, Tenormin, T-E-N-O-R-M-I-N, $104 for 100 tablets, 13 cents to make it, 80,000% profit. Here's Vasotec, V-A-S-O-T-E-C, 100 tablets, $102.37. Active ingredients, 20 cents. Percent of markup, 51,185%. Xanax, Z-A-N-A-X, 100 tablets, $136.79, 24 cents to make it. 569,958%. Or rounded off, it's 570,000% profit. Zestril, Z-E-S-T-R-I-L, 20 milligram tablet. Cost you $89.89 for 100 of them. Cost $3.20. Boy, they take a beating on that. It's only marked up their profit on it. It's only 2,809%. Way below the 569,000. Then we have Zithromax, Z-I-T-H-R-O-M-A-X, 600 milligrams. Consumer price, 100 tablets. $1,482.19. That costs you $14.82 a pill. That's expensive stuff. Cost of the ingredients is $18.78. Well, that's why they got to charge $1,400, because it cost them $18.78. So the profit margin, 7,892%. Zocor, Z-O-C-O-R, $350, costs $8.63 to make, at 4,000% markup profit. Now, it may not be net-net, I'm not claiming that it is, but their markup is so astronomical here. Is it fair for them to charge that kind of markup? I'm not here to argue with what's fair. I don't know if that's good, bad, or right, or wrong. But it gives you an illustration of why it is your medical costs are so high, and why it is that government now has you practically on your knees begging for socialized medicine, is because of the cost. The Zocor over here, 4,000% markup. Zoloft, Z-O-L-O-F-T. Percent of markup, 11,000%. So since the cost of prescription drugs is so outrageous, I thought everyone should know about this. Now, there's drugs out there that are called, how they call those now, over-the-counter. Not over-the-counter. You got a name for it. When you buy drugs that are not brand-name drugs, you might want to shop around a little bit and buy the off-brand drugs. They're all put out by the same people, just sold under a different brand name. So it might save you a few bucks there, but the point that we're making here is that this thing is a cartel. It's a drug trust, and there are people behind that. Now, if you like the names of these people behind it, you stay tuned, because in the next program, we're going to take a look at the names of the people who operate this drug trust here in the United States. And then there'll even be some names in Europe and around the world. Meanwhile, we're out of time, so I've got to remind you here that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.